Have you heard the Christmas story as first recorded by the historian Luke in the Bible? If not, then listen up to the beginning of what has been called the greatest story ever told. And if it is familiar to you, I invite you to try in your imagination to listen as if you have never heard it before. In those days, Caesar Augustus issued a decree that a census should be taken of the entire Roman world. This was the first census that took place while Quirinius was the governor of Syria, and everyone went to his own town to register. So Joseph also went up from the town of Nazareth in Galilee to Judea, to Bethlehem, the town of David, because he belonged to the house and line of David. He went there to register with Mary, who was pledged to be married to him and was expecting a child. While they were there, the time came for the baby to be born, and she gave birth to her firstborn, a son. She wrapped him in cloths and placed him in a manger because there was no room for them in the inn. And there were shepherds living out in the fields nearby, keeping watch over their flocks at night. An angel of the Lord appeared to them, and the glory of the Lord shone around them, and they were terrified. But the angel said to them, "Do not be afraid. I bring you good news of great joy that will be for all the people. Today, in the town of David, a Savior has been born to you. He is Christ, the Lord. This will be a sign to you. You'll find a baby wrapped in cloths and lying in a manger." Suddenly, a great company of the heavenly host appeared with the angel, praising God and saying, "Glory to God in the highest, and on earth peace to men on whom his favor rests." When the angels had left them and gone into heaven, the shepherds said to one another, "Let's go to Bethlehem and see this thing that has happened, which the Lord has told us about." So they hurried off and found Mary and Joseph and the baby, who was lying in the manger. When they had seen him, they spread the word concerning what had been told them about this child. And all who heard it were amazed at what the shepherds said to them. But Mary treasured up all these things and pondered them in her heart. The shepherds returned, glorifying God and praising God for all the things that they had heard and seen, which were just as they had been told. So you hear the story, and you can't help but think that Christmas was not off to a very good start. In fact, when you look at all the circumstances, you have to quickly conclude that the day started poorly. It was the beginning of what may have seemed to be a lousy Christmas. And you've been there. You know about lousy Christmases, those times when there are such high expectations that everyone will be perfect and everyone will get along and everyone will be happy. And it's good until everyone gets together. And suddenly there are family conflicts, and there's a shortage of money, and the gifts are wrong, and there was too much work at the office, and you're feeling sick. And it all becomes something of a perfect storm. And somehow in our imagination, we imagine that the perfect storm will blow together until everyone is happy for the holiday. As one fifth grader observed, the holiday was a bummer even for Jesus, having Christmas and his birthday on the same day. Well, the circumstances of that first Christmas, actually, they were enough to discourage even the downer Ebenezer Scrooge. Politics, they were oppressive. Jews in Israel lived with a Roman occupation, an army that was always there. The Romans weren't there to make people happy or to keep them pleased. The Romans were there to get what they could get out of an oppressed people. The Romans were conquerors. They imposed their law and they enforced it. In their extremes, The Romans, they stole what they want. They enslaved who they pleased, and they crucified the people that they did not like. So I don't know what you think of modern American politics, but our modern politics at their worst are probably better than first century politics in Israel were at their best. And the taxes in those days were excessive. The Romans got whatever they could. Sometimes the taxes were crippling. They had land tax, and they had customs tax, and they had head tax. The taxes ranged from about 10% to 33% for a poor day laborer. It took 3 weeks of every year at hard labor just to pay the taxes to the Romans. You say, well, you know, I don't know. Taxes are part of every generation, and my taxes may even be a higher percentage than that. Although, for those Jews, they were paying money to salary the occupation army, to send money back to Rome so that they, with their earnings, could empower an army that oppressed them. And there were, in those days, as there often are, tax protesters, those that insisted that the Romans shouldn't be exacting the taxes that they were. And especially there was opposition to the head tax that often came with a census. And it was the head tax that was required of Joseph. The law of the Romans required him and his young family to travel 90 miles to their ancestral home and there to pay 2 drachma, 2 days' wages. You could say, well, the taxes weren't all that much, but you know, he had to take time off of work. He had to travel a significant distance with travel expenses. And it had to be ricocheting through his mind that he was actually collaborating with the enemy to pay those taxes. It was painful. And the travel at best was inconvenient. Can you imagine walking or riding on a donkey for 90 miles? And it was a circuitous journey. Because between where Joseph lived and where he had to go was the land of the Samaritans. And the Jews and the Samaritans, well, they were like the Sunnis and the Shiites in modern history, didn't get along very well at all. And so they avoided each other's territory. And besides, his wife was pregnant. I mean, can you imagine this week walking from the Twin Cities to Rochester to just take that journey on foot for this Christmas? And then to get there, and the accommodations were at best uncomfortable because when they arrived, everything was sold out. Maybe you've experienced that. I have. You pull into a town and you see one no vacancy sign after another. You become increasingly desperate and wonder where you're going to spend the night and how you're going to sleep. Every room for them was full. His wife was pregnant. The contractions were beginning. Ancient communities like this used to have a community stable. It was sort of a barnyard and then had stables around the perimeter. Sometimes they were caves on the outside of town. And the owner of that community stable, for a fee, he would let you put your horses or your donkeys or sheep in that place overnight. He would provide some straw and some food, but that was it. And after that, you were pretty much on your own. But you know, when you're desperate, you take what you can get. There's no place else to go. And Joseph and Mary, they were desperate. And so that's where they had to go. You know how restaurants and hotels have star ratings? You know, a 2-star and a 4-star and a 5-star? This was a 0-star place where they stayed. And the medical care, I mean, how can you even talk about the medical care? It was hopelessly inadequate. In those days, most commonly, it was a midwife that would deliver a child, or if not a midwife, then it was the woman's mother or the older women who were relatives. But Mary, she was 90 miles from home. Her mother wasn't there. I certainly doubt that there was a midwife anywhere near that barnyard. And so this young Mary had to give birth like the animals give birth. And it was at a time when everybody knew a story of several women who had died in childbirth. And it must have been downright scary. And the shepherds, for them, the interruption was terrifying. They were in a nearby pasture, and they didn't even know that Christmas was happening. They were people of routine. They were sort of at the low end of the social spectrum. It was a lower class job. They just spent every day like every other day, 365 days of the year, feeding sheep and protecting sheep and doctoring sheep and shearing sheep and selling sheep. And at nighttime, you had to be there with the sheep. And so they'd sit out on the ground or on the rocks by a fire, and life was totally predictable because nothing ever changed. Maybe you could say that boring was good. At least sometimes it's good. But suddenly and unexpectedly, their lives were upended by angels who just about knocked their sandals off with this sudden, unexpected appearance. And they were literally almost scared to death. They were just terrified. Have you been terrified? When I was a college student, I drove by myself from Wisconsin to New Jersey, about a 24-hour drive in a Volkswagen Beetle. And I was tired and the journey was boring, one interstate and turnpike after another. And as I was driving on the Pennsylvania Turnpike after a lot of hours on the road, I fell asleep behind the wheel. And at 60 miles an hour, I don't know how long I was asleep, but woke up with a startle and saw the grill of a semi right in front of me being towed backwards. And I was terrified. I stayed awake the entire rest of the way. That's what they were. That's what they felt. They were terrified. And that is not a good feeling, to be terrified. So put all this adventure together, and it was dangerous. There were roadside robbers, financial pressures, medical dangers, visiting strangers, and then that pervasive smell of barnyard manure. It's just not my idea of a good Christmas, and certainly not a merry one. And the bottom line of this smelly, scary Christmas, the bottom line is joy. Joy. How strange is that? The angel explained, I bring you good news of great joy that will be for all the people. So how exactly does that work? How do you have joy on a road trip that you don't even want to take? Or how do you have joy when your wallet is empty and the taxes are due? Or how do you have joy when you have to take a week off work that's not vacation and without pay? Or how do you have joy when you're feeling labor contractions in a stinking barnyard, which is the last place in the world that you want to deliver your own baby? How do you have joy in the midst of politics that you hate? Or joy when you're so scared that you're shaking, you're afraid you'll die, you're so terrified. How do you have joy when you're surrounded by and caught up in all of these circumstances you cannot control and do not understand? Because if we can figure that out, if we can figure out how they had joy that Christmas in all of these unwanted circumstances, then we can figure out how to have joy in all of our circumstances. Wouldn't that be great? To have joy when you're broke, to have joy when you're paying your taxes, to have joy when you're in labor, to have joy when you're in a smelly feedlot. Wouldn't it be great to be able to have joy in every circumstance of life? The dictionary defines joy as that emotion that is excited by the expectation of good. So what it is to have a joy that is exciting beyond every circumstance. It isn't that life's perfect, because often joy is greatest when life isn't very good. It's saying that in the best of times, when everything is going well, this is a kind of joy that transcends above the best of circumstances. When things are going so badly that you don't feel you can take it anymore, This is a joy that trumps even the worst of circumstances. It's the joy of Christmas. It's the joy of Jesus. Because when we get Jesus, we have joy because Jesus is bigger and better than anything else. We have joy because Jesus trumps whatever else is bad or good in our lives. He is the Son of God. He loves us. He came from heaven to earth. He gives us eternal life to all who believe. Jesus engages every part, every aspect of our lives. The angel got it right. I bring you good news of great joy that will be for all the people. So let me tell you the story of Stella Thornhope. Stella Thornhope's husband suffered a long and lingering cancer that took his life just a few months before Christmas. It was then just a few days before Christmas when a big snowstorm came in. She was grieving. She decided not to put up any Christmas decorations. She decided to skip that Christmas. And in the midst of her melancholy, the doorbell rang. And there was a young man, really just a boy, a delivery boy, who stood there with a box that seemed kind of heavy. And he asked Stella to sign as a receipt that she had received this gift. And she signed it, and then she said, "Well, what's in the box?" And the delivery boy got a big smile and he tore open the box and he reached in and he pulled out a 6-week-old Labrador retriever. And the dog is wiggling all over the place and she's trying to figure this out. And she said, "Well, who sent this?" And then the delivery boy handed to her a note and said, "This will explain everything." He said the puppy was purchased before the dog was born, when the mother was pregnant. And it's a Christmas present for her. And with the note, Stella Thornhope was given a book on how to care for a Labrador retriever. Before reading the note, she insisted on knowing who had sent this dog. And the delivery boy said, "Your husband, ma'am. This is his Christmas present to you. Merry Christmas." And Stella opened the note in her husband's handwriting. It had been written 3 weeks before he died. It was a love letter of concern for her. And he had bought for her a dog that would be delivered to her house after he was gone. And so it was with tears running down her cheeks that Stella Thornhope picked up the puppy, looked out the window in the snowstorm, saw the lights outlining the house across the street. And then she says, "The radio in the kitchen started to play the words, 'Joy to the world, the Lord has come.'" Her difficult circumstances had not changed, but her life was filled with joy because it was a joy that was greater than grief. Last month, I was in the Hashemite kingdom of Jordan. You probably remember the famous King Hussein of Jordan, who died in 1999. Many Americans don't know the king of the last 7 years, but he is a hero in the kingdom of Jordan. King Abdullah II is 44 years old, and he has an interesting practice where he dresses up in different disguises, sneaks out of the royal palace, and goes to mingle among the people without security. And so there are times when he has put on a beard, There are times when he has dressed all in white. There are other times when he has dressed as a beggar and a pauper. King Abdullah has gone out and gotten in long lines at government agencies and gotten into conversation with his subjects without them ever knowing who he was. He has driven taxi cabs. One time he pretended to be an old man who was admitted to a state hospital. Another time he became a TV reporter who was doing a documentary on duty-free shops. Can you imagine? Can you imagine a Jordanian who is living an ordinary day and having a conversation with what just seems to be another ordinary person, and then to realize he's the king? The king was driving you in your taxi ride. The king was your patient at the hospital. The king was in line with you. That would be a day that you would never forget. And whatever else was happening in the circumstances of that day would be triumphed over in the exhilaration and joy of the king who had come your way. I don't know if this Christmas is your best Christmas or your worst Christmas, your first Christmas or your last Christmas, but I do know that you can get the joy of Christmas that trumps all other circumstances, and that is through Jesus. As he came to Bethlehem, let him come into your heart. When he shows up in your taxi or your hospital or your waiting line or office, meet him, get to know him, receive his blessing and his love and his salvation, because the Christmas angel got it right. That no matter what the circumstances are, whatever your circumstances, Jesus gives joy. Joy to the world. The Lord has come.